Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 25th of June, 2020. On the podcast today, Graham Swindells, Chief Executive Officer of Deltek Energy, DELT. And Graham explains why they've changed their name from Clough Natural Resources and also provides a general update. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers news from the following companies: EasyJet, Royal Mail, and AutoTrader. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. You can see top 10 versions of both these lists at VoxMarkets.co.uk, and you can check out a whole host, a plethora, a bunch of content from articles for NSF. There's a Renewal article, there's Mastrana Group article there, and of course, don't forget, at the top of the page, our COVID-19 index. Biggest riser today is Novacyt, up 10%, 255, and biggest faller is Way Education, down 9% to 2450. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Graham Swindells, Chief Executive Officer of Clough Natural Resources, or we should say Deltek Energy, DELT. You're right, Graham. Thanks for coming on.
Not at all. Morning, Justin.
It's good to mention that, Clough Natural Resources. I got an RNS this morning from the Vox app, and it popped up DELT. I thought, what's that? And, you know, even though sort of, you know, forecasts have told people about this, people always forget. And it's always nice to explain why it's happened and the thought process behind it. So before we do that, Graham, for people not familiar with Clough, now Deltek Energy, could you just summarise what the business is about, please?
Sure. So Deltek is an oil and gas exploration company. We have an ambition to become one of the UK's leading independent E&P companies, but with a particular focus on gas. We've got 7 licenses in the Southern North Sea gas basin and the Central North Sea. We had a transformational year last year in particular, with Shell farming into 2 of our licenses. And we're seeking to continue to build on that success by drilling wells starting next year and continuing to build the portfolio and grow the company.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go through the thought process behind Deltek Energy, not changing direction anyway. So why the name change?
Sure. Well, this is something we've been thinking about for some time. We were very pleased to get shareholder approval at our AGM for this. And now, as of this morning, being in a position to confirm the formal change of name of the company. And really, this name change reflects a new era for our company, and in particular, the significant progress we've made in the last year or so, and symbolises a transition, you know, in the company's business to a more operational phase as we continue to develop our partnership with Shell. Naturally, the previous name of the company was lent to the company by the original founder of the business, but who stepped down a couple of years ago and then informally retired as chairman just over a year ago. I've taken over as chief executive, and we have Mark Lappin, who assumed the role of chairman this time last year. And Mark has a huge amount of international E&P experience with the likes of Exxon, Conoco, knows the North Sea, in particular the gas basin, like the back of his hand, and has been instrumental in steering us through the recent developments that we've and successes that we've had, and will continue to do so. Over that period of time, say we've secured these two farm outs with Shell. We've properly capitalized the business so that we're now fully funded for our share of the drilling of those two wells over the next 1 to 2 years, and really feel that now is the right time to change the company's name to reflect those changes, the progress that have been made, and this new era for our company.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I say, it's a transformational year, sort of last year, but I suppose bigger news to come, isn't it, really? And potential upside is huge. Of course, Shell joining you in that. So what would you say is sort of the next bit of news, next milestone you're hoping to share with the market then, Graham?
Well, we anticipate significant news flow over the coming months and obviously years. But certainly if we just look at the coming months, we are in the final stages of completing the final technical milestones on the Selene prospect, and we anticipate being able to update on that shortly. We'll also be updating on the results of the seismic that was shot by Shell the second half of last year on our Pensacola prospect. We also anticipate being in a position to announce the outcome of the 32nd licensing round, where we've made a significant suite of applications for new licenses in both the Southern North Sea and the Central North Sea, one of which has been made with a major global international operator. We anticipate being in a position to announce that the contingent well commitment on Pensacola becomes firm around about the end of November, and certainly subject to market conditions, we're potentially going to be commencing the farm out on our Cupertino and Cortez prospects, as well as continuing to progress our Dur oil prospect, which we believe is drill ready. So quite a number of major milestones and catalysts, all of which have the potential to drive value in the company.
Yeah, marvellous stuff, Graham. Well, as always, in summary, if you could, if someone is listening to that and likes the sound of what you're doing here and can see there's a potential big future ahead and lots of big news flow, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page now. Deltic Energy, of course, DELT, and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay. We have a fantastic portfolio of seven licenses with the scope to grow through further license awards and, for that matter, acquisition. With our world-class partner in Shell, with a high-impact drilling expected to commence second half of next year on Pensacola, and then following on from that on the Selene prospect. We've got a relatively strong balance sheet with no debt, best part of $13 million of cash, but low overheads. And I suppose finally, we're currently trading at a significant discount to cash and about an 80% discount to our fully risked net asset value. So with the level of activity that we've got going on, we believe that the company represents an extremely compelling value proposition for shareholders.
Excellent stuff. Graham, it's good to chat to you as always. And like I say, lots of news. So hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris.
Yeah, very well. Thanks. Well, melting in the heat, but apart from that, all good. Wish the stock market was a bit warmer, though.
Yeah, well, the weather's getting hotter, stock market's cooling down, but like we just said, it's the stock market, it's a bit like the weather. It gets to extremes and it cools off and goes the other way. Do you know what? Last night, it almost could be so hot, I couldn't be bothered to open the RNS. It popped up on my phone from the notifications via Vox there, and I saw several companies raising money. Amongst one of them, which you mentioned a while back, said Banby raising money soon, is EasyJet, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely, no great surprise. That the only slight surprise was that they sort of all announced it yesterday afternoon. That's Wednesday afternoon. When, you know, normally these things are kind of after the close and kind of done sort of in the after hours session and then announced the next morning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, timing was interesting. My guess is someone in the press got hold of the story and was going to sort of write it up or something that forced their hand. But anyway, they raised money. It was 15% of share capital, which was sort of what kind of people tend to do. So it's a decent chunk of change. And, you know, they're doing it for all the right reasons. Shore up the balance sheet a bit further, give them a bit more flexibility, just in case the bounce back in air travel takes a bit longer than what they've guided. This certainly gives them more than ample cash to get deep into, you know, summer season 2021, which I'm sure by then they hope that the conditions are somewhat more normal. So sensible stuff. We talked about it a few weeks ago. It was inevitable. I think they could have finessed the timing a touch better, in the sense that the shares were, you know, a couple of hundred pence higher a few weeks back. But there you go. You know, sometimes these things are out of your hands. You've got results to publish. You know, you've got other things to work out, shareholders to talk to, or large institutional shareholders to talk to, etc. Now, my big question is, has Stelios, you know, Mr. EasyJet, you know, the founder, the guy who's still the largest shareholder, has he joined in or not? Because that at the moment, I don't know the answer to that. Because what he said was a few weeks back or a couple of months ago, he said, look, guys, you need to do a money raising. You don't want to run out of cash, but you need to make sure that you're going to cancel those big plane orders that you got with Airbus, because, you know, you just don't raise cash to give it to Airbus if there's no particular need. You know, it's part of a general strategy. Now, EasyJet have delayed some of their plane orders. Absolutely. They haven't cancelled them. So that's going to hack Stelios off a bit. We know that he's still on their case, judging by his recent sort of stirring of the pot and everything else, trying to get directors removed and whatnot. So at best, there's an uneasy piece. My feeling is he probably hasn't subscribed. They've probably taken on money from you know, a broader range of institutional shareholders. This was just a placing. It wasn't a rights issue or anything. So my guess is that it started the dilution of Stelios's holding, which possibly is something the EasyJet management are not too unhappy about.
Yeah.
We'll see. All I do know is that the shares, okay, it's a shabby old day on the market today. All I do know is the shares are actually trading below the placing price. Not the best, you know, immediate reaction, but as I say, there's clearly some broader exogenous things happening. You know, markets are worried about American coronavirus rates and stuff like that. So there you go. You know, they've bitten the bullet, did the sensible thing finally, and they'll hope that they can roll out their corporate strategy progressively over the next year or so.
Yeah, well, it was done at 5% discount at the closing price of £7.40 yesterday, and now the shares are £6.95 now, so they're below £7.03 was the replacement price. So it's always pretty, pretty annoying for those institutional investors that have ploughed some money in, and they, straight away it's gone below that price. Oh,
it is. I mean, you know, it's funny. There has been a bit of an evolution. You know, remember you and I talking about a few other placings a few weeks ago, which went to these massive, you know, they did the placing at 100 pence and the shares were trading at 120p in the market the next morning, because, you know, they really were at that point placings which made sure a company survived or stuff like that. EasyJet's a bit more mature. It had a bit of time. They weren't in an absolutely disastrous position, but, you know, it gave them a bit more flexibility. But the thing is, if you're a large institutional player, yeah, you will be annoyed at the margin. You look a bit silly, egg on face and stuff like that. But for them to get a decent chunk of shares, you know, obviously that can have market impact as well. They may struggle to have you know, filled positions, you know, at the closing price yesterday and stuff like that without there being a placing. So it swings and roundabouts. Ultimately, if you're buying a place, it's like anything. If you're being offered shares by a company, placing, rights issue, whatever, you know, don't look at just, oh my goodness, it's a 30% discount or 5%, whatever it is for EasyJet. whatever it might be, the discount to the prevailing share price, ask yourself the question, does it make sense going forward? And only buying to those that you can make the medium-term story work. Because a bad company running out of cash, having an emergency money raising, you know, maybe doesn't turn into a miraculously brilliant company overnight. Maybe in a year's time, they're having to raise more money at a lower share price, et cetera, et cetera. It's always about medium-term strategy. So I think the institutional boys they'll be a bit embarrassed, but they'll ultimately be, you know, thinking, you know, there's a medium-term story here they want to buy into.
Yeah, it is about, like you said, it may be a bit late, but it's all about the timing, isn't it? And, you know, it's quite tricky. So like I said, they should have really have gone looking when the share price was sort of taking off rather than landing, because at the moment, the whole market seems to be rolling over. There's more worry now about a second wave. I think America had the most cases, or the joint most cases they've ever had yesterday. So we see it's well, you know, when we had that fear, so much fear about now, but there is that worry that we may be heading over to retest the lows again, because we've gone past, we've had this sort of jubilation of the reopening, everything's reopening, things are coming down, and now the virus is spreading again, and people are starting to look beyond this now, thinking, okay, what's the economic damage? And like I say, you know, it's going to be a while before, 2 years pretty much, before Egypt probably gets back to normal. So we're going to have quite a few bad reports coming out, earnings reports, showing quite disastrous figures. So, you know, will the share price hold up during those times? It's hard to say, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, with all airlines, it's about the future. You know, we all know they're operationally geared businesses. That's blindly obvious. So, yeah, they're risky businesses, no doubt about that. But with it comes generally, typically, lower than average ratings. That's certainly true for EasyJet or Ryanair. They've never really attracted the premium ratings perhaps their kind of their growth model would have in other industries would have led to. So yeah, it's puts and takes as always. My feeling is they are a survivor. They are ultimately a thriver. I think what they do is something where there clearly is demand. It may well change, but people will go out of business who would have been competing with them or become less effective competitors. So yeah, puts and takes and everything else. My feeling is, I do own a few EasyJet shares. Obviously, I wasn't offered any in the placing. I think I don't know whether there was a primary bid option or something like that as well. I didn't really see, but you know, my feeling is, I'm holding here, and you know, we'll see where it goes. You know, certainly I wasn't looking to sell any of the shares that I've accumulated in recent months until there was at least a 10 on the board. So, you know, we're a little way off that. We looked as if we were going to push through it a few weeks ago. We'll see. As always with airline stocks, you hope you probably anticipate the shares are more volatile, hopefully, than the plane ride.
Yeah. No, I do you know what? I think we'll have a bit of volatility, but like I say, there's been quite a few people now in authority saying a vaccine looks very possible to be, almost successful and trialled through to clinical phase 3 before the end of the year. So, of course, it'll take another several months, probably even a year, to get to the majority of the population who need it. But I suppose at the start, you start vaccinating the vulnerable and the people on the front line, NHS and all that stuff. But I think once we have that signal, I think we'll have another rally again. But as yet, I think we still have to have the financial fallout yet, because we haven't had that. You know, we're only starting to get that financial fallout when we start to open the economies back up, and we'll see the state of play there, because there's so many businesses, you know, with holes in their balance sheets. So I think we've yet to go through that rough, turbulent section yet, but there we are. But yeah, you know, a couple of years down the line, they'll be back to their highs, won't they, EasyJet? It's just time and patience, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I would agree.
Cool. What's next for us? Anything else?
Well, got to take a quick look, I think, at Royal Mail. I mean, Royal Mail, it's a business, it's a utility, let's face it. You know, obviously quite a controversial privatisation. Some people didn't agree with it, but it seemed to be a one that was working at that moment in time when it was listed. The shares did quite well. The posties got a bunch of free shares as well. They were quite happy with that. Pension fund in surplus. There was a story about parcels, you know, not just in the UK but internationally with a distribution business they also owned. It all seemed quite workable, but the wheels have come off this one. And it's not just the coronavirus, you know, which clearly has hastened, quickened the sort of the move away from post, from letters and stuff like that. We can all see that. But managerially wise, they've been an absolute disaster. There's been a bunch of issues and challenges. They've changed CEOs a couple of times in too quick a period. It's been a right old mess. Mm. And today's numbers, I mean, are just indicative of that. They're saying again that the UK postal business, that's letters and parcels, will be loss making. Why is that? Parcels are fine. You know, parcel volumes are actually up 30-odd%, but letters volumes were down well over 30%. So that wasn't very good. And they're also saying things such as advertising volumes, advertising letters are down even more sharply, as you would expect. People shifting online or just not sending them out. But also, they've had massive industrial relations issues. They've had productivity problems. Productivity plans haven't worked. And obviously, the coronavirus has been a disruption. Staff members off ill and stuff like that. So you put it all together, extra costs, lower volumes in some key areas. It's going to be loss-making, which is not good. Then they're not going bust or anything like that. You know, the balance sheet is strong enough to withstand, you know, many years of losses or low profitability. It's just if you're a shareholder, you say to yourself, why bother? You know, and you look at the shares have come down. They seem to be exhibiting some value on some sort of historic measure. But to be honest, the story looking forward here, you need to see a stabilization. And that stabilization is not just letters, which is probably never going to happen. It's not so much that parcels will keep on growing, which I think is probably true. But it just seems to be you need some stabilization at the sort of the manager stroke staff level. You know, you need to see the fact that this company is actually working coherently together and not seemingly tearing each other apart. So, yeah, they've suspended the dividend, which was one other aspect which some people got excited about. Bottom line, I think even though the shares are, you know, well off the level seen over the last year or two, not quite at the lows. The lows were achieved, unsurprisingly, back in March this year. I just can't find anything to be excited about. It was just a very dull and tedious statement, to be honest. And I'm not surprised to see the shares down a few percent when I last looked this morning.
Yeah, so Keith Williams, it sounds like a postie, really. Interim executive chair says he's got a three-step plan, hasn't he? So basically cutting costs and all that stuff, accelerating the pace of operational change. 2,000 roles going from management, so that's a lot of management roles, isn't it?
That is. You know,
too many managers, that,
let's be honest. It is. You know, Royal Mail just seems to me as if it's stuck in. I think they got very excited about the parcels opportunity, and you can understand it. Yeah. You know, we can all see how e-commerce is a growth area, but something's gone wrong there. You know, that is just, the wheels have come off, and yeah, it's not been well led, but also there's a legacy still of a sort of a perhaps a lack of a can-do attitude. Certainly some of the productivity initiatives have been pushed back. People worried about their jobs, worried about a machine replacing them. I can understand that. But the trouble is, from a shareholder's perspective, and, you know, I have owned shares in this one in the past, I don't own them today. You know, the story very much was parcels and productivity. And, you know, the former is sort of still working, but the latter certainly isn't.
Yeah, look at that. Profit before tax down pretty much 25% from last year to 241 million to 180. Yeah, and the same kind of, and the turnover's gone up. So that just shows the margins have been squeezed and costs and all that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Anything else happening, Chris?
Yeah, and another one on sort of the profitability kind of line struck me was Auto Trader. Now, Never owned shares in this fund, but kind of, I've got a kind of a what I would call a growing admiration of their brand, of their corporate strategy. You know, we all think about Auto Trader as some grubby magazine, you know, oil stain magazine. You flick through the cars, pages and pages of cars and the like for sale.
It's funny you have that. Do you know what? It's funny you have that perception. I just have it as the website. My father does own cars, and I thought it's basically the right move for cars. It's a market force, a dominant player. And I just thought I bought some shares a while back on the dip, and I sold them because they're near their high. And I thought, hang on, there's no way they can be performing as well as when they're at their high. So I just sold some. So all of them.
But this is it. Obviously, Justin, you've clearly either wiped the memories of your youth, or you didn't have a misspent youth like me looking through
Do you know what you say that now? It's brought it back to me. But and I thought, really, but in my image, completely, it's the website. Cause I suppose my father is in the car industry, and he has to deal, and he knows how much money they charge. And like estate agents, they bemoan it really, but it's a necessary evil. It's like Rightmove charge a lot of money, but because it's a dominant market leader, you have to be in there, you know. So you have to pay the fees, and but they can charge that premium, you know. So it's the market.
That's it. And it's absolutely, and today's model is very much, you know, it's almost it's exclusively online, basically. That it's, as you say, to think about it as the Rightmove of automotive purchase is a good way to think about it. Clearly there are alternatives, just like there are to Rightmove, but kind of today's update was kind of interesting. Clearly it's in two parts. You've got historic numbers before the coronavirus hit, which were kind of workable, showed progress and everything else, and you had what's been happening since. I tell you what struck me. Clearly, in April and May, business was negligible, you know, unsurprisingly. You know, everyone could understand that. That they gave some revenue lines on a month-to-month basis, and literally, there was almost no revenue. And what was happening was that they were still encouraging people to use them, but they did it by offering free offers and extended low prices and stuff like that for advertisers to come in, which is smart, because you've got to keep at least people coming back and to have a look at something or to place adverts, even if there's not much actual trade going on. But obviously that's having to start to change. I think from the start of July, they're going back to full pricing, which obviously is going to be an interesting moment. But I tell you what struck me as interesting about the numbers today, and that was in June. In June, they actually, as per the numbers they provided, they actually are on course to make a small profit. Right. And actually, I thought to myself, that's actually quite impressive. You know, it goes to show that when you have this sort of model, it is operationally leveraged, of course, but it's something where actually your sort of your core costs are perhaps not as much as you think. And, you know, when you have that additional advertiser at full price, it can make a big difference. You know, your gross margins, to put it in the accounting parlance, your gross margins are very high. That's the nice thing about this model. We all get that. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I can sort of understand why, as you say, I was surprised. I looked at the share price chart. My goodness, it's, you know, 50-80p off the all-time high, which seems a bit crazy. I can't make that work as a sort of a value story. But as a model, I think this is one to be keeping an eye on. Quite impressed by the June numbers. Let's see what happens when they go back to full pricing in July. But I have to say, thematically, they're in the right place. And if they sort of copy the Rightmove sort of profile, not a bad one to copy, I'd suggest.
Yeah. No, do you know what? It's like I think Rightmove margins are up around those levels, 80%. Their operating profit margin increased to 70%. So there's not many companies like that, and that just shows the dominance that they have, you know. So otherwise, it's, you know, and like I said, there are alternatives, but because they've got such a small market share, people go to the market leader all the time, like the Rightmoves and things. But of course, they will be nipped at the heels all the time. You know, others, if they're good, we'll start taking up share, but at the moment, it's. I tell you what, though, what helps them, I suppose, is during, you know, the sort of reopening recently. I know my father's starting to reopen, and he says you can sell cars, but it has to be done remotely. You know, you have to park the car, move the car out of them, put it over the road somewhere so someone can see it, and then if they want to buy it, you deliver it to them remotely and all that stuff. So it can be done, and I suppose, I don't know if they advertise as well as collect fees from dealers, Auto Trader, but, you know, people sitting at home, nothing to do, and they know they're going back to work. Browsing cars and houses is a good thing. It's a nice little pastime, isn't it? So you've got the traffic there. It is. Demand, you know?
It is. Absolutely. And some of that demand will turn into final demand. Yeah. You know, it would go beyond just browsing. Indeed, I mean, it's another debate as to whether people should be choosing to splurge on a new car or house or something. You know, that depends on personal circumstances and whatever else. I guess if they've been trading internet stocks or nearly bus stocks in the States, maybe they've got a bunch of money or something. But I would say, it's at least getting in front of people and being the sort of the clear market leader. You know, that is something medium term, again, you can sort of get your head around as an investor and saying, that's quite interesting. This is certainly on my watch list. You know, I'm increasingly impressed by the strategy, and I wouldn't have thought I would have said that a few years back.
Yeah. I mean, I think there'll be opportunities to buy again, because I genuinely feel, I keep saying this, I mean, the fact that so many companies refuse or will not give forward guidance tells me we don't know what's to come yet. And so the picture ahead is quite foggy, you know, it's opaque. And I think there's going to be a lot more when these, you know, people, sort of 9 million people now on furlough, isn't it? When they all come off furlough and companies have to start employing them again, And if the demand isn't there, they're just going to have to lay them off. And I think that will have a big knock on the stock market. I think the stock market will sort of marry up with the real economy then, finally. So I still think we've got a bit of volatility ahead of us, at least for the next 6 months. Yeah, you wouldn't have thought it, though. Looking at the last sort of couple of months, the stock market's gone nuts, especially in America. But, of course, it's held up by tech stocks. But there we are. But I just think, do you not think that we've got some volatility ahead of us?
Yeah, I think volatility is inevitable, but volatility can be your friend as well as your foe.
Yeah.
And this is why I think the better, I'm always a glass half full person. So, I could argue, this, that, and the other about opportunity rather than threat.
Yeah.
But let's put it this way. As an active investor, you should be looking forward to this. It's a big challenge, no doubt about that. But it's a challenge tinged with significant opportunity. And be it if you've got a bunch of cash at the moment, you can time the return of that money back to the market. Or even if you're fully invested, there's nothing that makes you feel more alive as an investor in trying to work stuff out. And hopefully on a reasonable basis, or at least more often than not, getting it right. And I think the 2020s, if I think about it thematically, the 2020s is not going to be buy a cheap tracker index product and just buy and hold. Now, that has been massively, unbelievably remunerative over the last 10, 20, whatever years. But I think it's going back much more to the markets that I kind of grew up with in the 80s, or kind of I can read about in the 70s, which are a lot more anarchic but opportunistic. And I can tell you that's interesting, that's fun. You can do fabulously well, you can clearly do awfully as well, but that's the game. And this is a money game, and it's important stuff, and obviously it's sensible stuff as well, particularly when you're investing for your pension fund and things like that. But in terms of the challenge, the opportunity, I'm excited. It's in a certain level, the fact that it's not clear, the fact that you've got to use some of your skills to try to work out where to go. That's what makes, to me, the big challenge. That's what I'm looking forward to in the whole of the 2020s. I hope we get beyond the virus, because clearly that's horrible and impactful at many multiple levels. But I think economically wise, loads of things to be thinking about, to be intrigued by, to be excited by, to be worried about. But, that's life.
I genuinely only see that volatility as opportunity all the time. Like you say, always got a little bit of cash. I think we'll have a temporary rolling over at the moment, maybe until we get more stimulus. Then there's always opportunity. Listen, there's always, like you say, we've been focusing on indices too much, especially the S&P and the NASDAQ, but they're held up by those big tech stocks, Like, so there's plenty of opportunities out there, individual stocks that you have to look at, and there's bargains and money to be made. And that's the wonder of the stock market. It's a market, isn't it? It's a market of stocks,
Yeah, that's it. That's it. And that's what makes the money game an interesting one. So bring it on. But obviously bring it on. Slightly easier for markets to go up and down, but not always. It's you might have a short selling bias and have a slightly different view. Whatever works, that's the exciting thing about it.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Cheers, Chris. We'll speak to you next week.
Sounds good. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. UK Oil and Gas, down 7.14% to 0.325. At four, Velocys, down 24% to 8 pence. Did a big fundraise, I think, didn't they recently? Oh, yeah, last night. At three, Fastjet, up 9.76 to 0.225. At two, 4D Pharma, down 3% to 47.5. And at one, Iconic Labs, up 10% to 0.0182. Okay, top five most liked to most read RNSs are as follows. At five, Victoria PLC trading update. At four, Marston's result of meeting. At three, 4D Pharma Holdings. At two, Roslyn Data Technology. Contract renewals there. And at one, Cora Gold Limited, positive metallurgical work, test work results. That's it for the podcast. In fact, what are they? They're down at the moment, 3.5% to 8.75 pence, Cora. But that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.